CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning. Is that an evil laugh or just a stupid one? You tell me. Do you think it's stupid? Yes, very stupid, says Leanne Moll.
It doesn't scare me.
It's not
all.
Scary, oh shit.
No.
And I failed. No. I failed. Hello, Sia.
It just needs to be reworked a little. Good morning. Right.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, your team of lunatics is here to take care of you this Monday morning, push you through from the start of the week to the end of it.
Ah.
See, the secret weapon in our arsenal here is Leanne Moll. We put her at the Monday and the Friday because she's like, she's there to kind of force Sia and I to be better on a Monday, and she allows us a little bit of leeway on a Friday so we know we can start our weekend. And if we didn't have her at both ends, then last week we were a disaster, right?
I like it at both ends.
I know you do.
Oh,
that's why we get me whatever you wanted.
It might
well,
be
haven't we started?
But I like to have it not just at one end, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's a bit of an HR violation.
There's our Leanne Moll, yeah. What a special.
So you're the head and the arse end.
Magical creature she is. She's at the front end and the arse end of everything.
Yes. Okay.
All right, so how things going, Sia? How things going, Leanne? What's happening? What's news?
I've had a bit of a rough week, to say the least.
Yeah, you don't have to go into it, but I mean, maybe you want to tell people just that you know, it's your life. Sometimes we joke that it's just like saga after saga, and it just seems almost impossible to believe that one person. I've told you how many times to write a book because no one would believe it; they'd think it was fiction.
Yeah.
But your life is just unbelievable, and the, you know, if it isn't really funny, interesting stuff, and it's funny usually because you've interpreted that way. It's not because most people would find this stuff hilarious. You've got this great way of turning the weirdest and shittiest and most bizarre and uncomfortable situations into like great life stories. Like if you ever wanted a perfect dinner guest, forget about like King Ramesses or just ask Leanne to come round. Jesus, has she got stories?
I do have a story for everything. So yeah, I'll just say that the week has been rough. I lost a family member, not to COVID or to any sort of natural cause. And it's been left to the family to unravel the mystery of his death. So it's been a heavy week, I'll tell you that much.
Sure.
But what I'm really grateful for is my family. Wow. Guys, I honestly think I have the best family in the world.
Well,
we just work together so well as a team.
You may do, and you've all got like a terrific sense of humor about all the things that have happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jesus.
Yeah. These things happen, you know, it's another notch in the belt of experience and learning how to deal with things. And we move on.
Yeah.
Damn it, I want to trade my family for yours.
Well, one day she'll incorporate this story that she's not in a place to tell us now, but she'll one day incorporate it into her book.
Absolutely.
Sure. What a lot of weird things. Yeah.
Here's just a random moment from this weekend that makes me want to trade my family for yours. My cousin sent me a screenshot of messages. Let me actually look specifically when they're
Give us
from.
Receipts.
From August 2009.
Yeah.
These are Facebook messages that he and I were sending to each other.
That's 11 years ago.
Mm. Yes. Regarding a fight we were having at that time.
Oh boy.
I can actually tell that I'm annoyed all over again.
You must have been what, 9?
2009, I was carry the 4. I was 14.
Okay.
And I'm annoyed all over again.
But and was it pathetic, though?
Well, yes. It all started with him pouring water on me while I was asleep.
Sorry, I'm childish. I love that.
No, it is.
I sounded like that kid from The Simpsons.
No, but the fact that it's annoying me all over again, and he's also like stoking the fire, like just poking me where I shouldn't be, is exactly why. I don't know if I'm the problem here or if he's the problem, but regardless, I think I need a new family. Here's one of the messages he sent. He says, two people live in one house but don't even talk to each other and ignore each other like the other's not even there. Is that even human? Then I responded, one person doing something stupid to another, like pouring water on him, is that human? Don't talk the talk, but don't walk the walk. I'm like, just stupid.
Oh my God, Theo, you've been dramatic all your life.
All your life. Every single, every waking second, Sia has been dramatic. This
like
is so good.
Consistently dramatic.
This is just silly. So silly.
But are you talking now in Friends?
Yes, but we might be going through a bit of
a
gravelly patch now that these messages have resurfaced.
Well, last week I thought I had COVID, right?
Mm.
Well, I don't think so. I think it's all like because everybody in the world, all they can talk about is this thing. I think I was maybe having some...
psychosomatic?
Yeah, some subconscious psychosomatic COVID envy. Because although I felt shit for one day, and I had a head cold, there's no doubt about that. Like the rest of it doesn't tie up at all. It doesn't make any sense. And I actually decided, just because I was paranoid. See, everybody, yeah. I'm the one who's like, oh, this COVID thing is over. It's totally over the top, and we've overreacted, and the whole world's stupid. And even so, I decided I'm going to stay home, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just to check myself out, make sure that I'm all right, you know. Not spread this around, that kind of thing.
If there are any other symptoms that pop up.
Just keep an eye on it. Like, I wasn't going to go for the test because I honestly didn't think I had enough symptoms to justify going for the test. Plus, when you go for the test, you probably expose yourself to really sick people and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so.
All right.
So I stayed at home. I didn't see another person. I spent the weekend doing cool things. Well, I think they're cool things, like framing photographs that I've wanted to. I could print photographs here at home, not like quality that you'd get at a you know out of a proper
studio.
Yeah, but I mean, I can print them on photographic paper and they come out okay, and then I frame them and put them up around the house and that kind of shit. So I was I was doing some cool things, and kind of keeping to myself, and had a lot of time to think and read. Yo, I've been reading. I'll tell you about that just now.
Mm.
Anyway. I woke up Saturday morning feeling very refreshed. Sunday morning, great. Today, great. So I really don't think I had anything to worry about. And obviously, you know, you always wonder at the back of your mind if you have or you haven't. But I've spoken to so many people who have had it. One of my friends and his wife are going through it now. And they've got like loss of taste and loss of smell. And they said they've had this fever for like 3 nights running. And then they've had really sore throat, and they've been coughing their lungs up and all that kind of thing. And I haven't really had any of that, so I felt a bit like one of those paranoid people who says they're sick when they're not. So
everyone experiences it differently. Yeah. You know, some people die of it, some people don't feel a thing.
I'm telling
so
you,
you'll be somewhere in between.
I know for sure I've had a cold before in my life, and this felt like a cold. It was a sinusy thing, and from everybody I've spoken to, this is much more of a breathing thing than a sinusy thing, if that makes any sense. And I did speak to a few doctors who I know as well, just to be sure. Because honestly, the only thing I'm ever worried about in this situation, I'm not going to die from COVID or from anything else, like cold or flu or whatever. But I am especially sensitive because there's so many people who are vulnerable in the world that I don't want to give it to them. So that's the only reason I've been extra cautious. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you because last week I was like, oh, maybe I'm sick. I'm fine.
I'm not going to mention their names because this is not my story to completely tell. But I was told by someone and really like shocked me over the weekend.
Yeah.
They are married to someone who tested positive and, of course, married, and they live together and have to share a house.
Mm-hmm.
And this person when they got their spouse's result, they thought, actually, screw it. I'm going to still be around them. I'm going to contract the virus as well. I just want to get it now and be done with it.
Right.
They told me I was shocked. They said, yeah, we've been sharing the same sink in the bathroom and we've been around each other and we're sharing the bed. And I thought, how are you feeling?
Both of them are okay?
They're both feeling fine now.
Mm-hmm.
But if that was one of the wills, part of your will, your vows rather, you know, at your wedding ceremony.
I'm going to tell you something. I do think that there is, for healthy people, there's a total overreaction here in some ways. So, you know, the evidence which we're starting to get more and more of now, and I don't want to talk about COVID every morning. I really don't.
Yeah.
Ben made me very aware of this last week because it's like your go-to topic with everybody.
Just a young gun.
Sorry, everybody, got disconnected there for some reason. And I was just saying to Leanne and Sia how great the connection is this morning. Typical. So I'm just going to shut my mouth about these things. But anyway, you go for your test on the Monday, and then while you're waiting for the results, you're getting on with your life and you're doing shopping and all of that stuff. Now, you could pick it up while you're waiting for your results.
Yeah.
Then you get your results, you think, okay, I'm negative. Meanwhile, you've got it and you're passing it around.
Yeah, there's no foolproof way to secure yourself or everyone else against this.
Correct. So you just have to live your life, be as careful as you can. Don't willfully pass it on because that is just very irresponsible. But at the same time, like, you can't stop everything.
Yeah.
You can't stop living, everybody. We can't cease to have our lives. You know? Anyway.
No, we still need to go out and be about.
Yeah. So I had a quite productive weekend, just sorting things out that needed sorting out. And I feel like I'm pretty much up to date. And when we do go back to normal, whatever that might be, I'm raring to go. I'm very excited about things. Just, you know what I'm most excited about? This is so dumb, but spring.
What?
Spring. Jesus. I walked outside yesterday quite early in the morning because I woke up, you know, reasonably early and went downstairs, made some coffee for myself, and I was standing outside having coffee. You know, like those philosophers you picture in a painting standing on the edge of a ledge looking out at the sea and kind of,
yes.
Except that I wasn't looking at the sea. I was looking at this morbid Gauteng winter scene. And it's brown and it's yellow and it's gray. You know the colors I'm talking about because you guys live in Gauteng too.
We do have crisp blue skies, though.
We do have beautiful skies and the sunsets are amazing in winter and all that. But that's not what I'm talking about. It looked like fucking Chernobyl in front of my house. Because everything's dead and brown and just cold and shit. And I just thought, you know, I'm so over winter. There is nothing I want about winter.
It feels so much longer because we're sitting through it. You know, usually when you're in an office, it's temperature controlled. You might just feel it every now and then when you go out and you need to put your jacket on. But our homes aren't built for this.
No.
And we're in them all day. So we're like running around with heaters and blankets and jerseys and too scared to shower because it's so cold.
Jesus.
But it just feels so long. It's going to be a good spring, I think.
I can't wait for spring. The first little tree or bush or flower that pops its little green nose out, I'm going to be so excited. I'll dance a jig and sing prayers to the gods and God, whatever else I have to do. I'm going to be so happy just to see winter's ass. Get out of here, winter.
August isn't a great month in terms of weather. Yeah. There'll be some cold snaps and a lot of wind, but just think of it blowing winter away and bringing in spring.
Right.
And look, I know we're done with this whole new normal thing because that train has long gone. But there's something about now realizing that we're in August that just made me accept that, okay, we're in this now. This
year,
is not a phase anymore.
Yeah, and the year is a write-off. Like, forget about 2020. I looked at my, you know, I keep goals for the year. I write my action lists for the year. Well, I looked at the year for 2020 and I have those categories of things that I want to do.
How many of them have been scuppered?
All of
them. Wow.
It's just, I've decided, okay, postpone that whole list to next year, maybe even the year after. Let's just survive. And if you, once you accept that, you like, okay, this is
scary.
The whole of humanity's had to waste this year just, you know, pushing through?
Depends on what you've done with it and what you've learned from it. And
well,
I mean, I certainly haven't done anything amazing.
No, but I mean, look at what
you've... But some people may have changed their lifestyles and lost weight and become fit. Or
do you know of any of those people?
Oh, I heard about Ben. Ben, no. Apparently.
Oh, yeah, okay, good point. Because I just know of one person in my life who's lost like 5 kgs, and that's it. Everyone else is just, oh, well.
Yeah. Well, look, we've discussed on the show before some of the pluses, and there are a few. But basically this year, you just take a break. And if you've ever been one of those people who said, oh, I'd just like the world to stop so I can just get off for a minute, you got your wish, okay?
Yeah, I'm one of those.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's a brand new week. We've got lots to do.
A brand new month.
Brand new month. August is finally here. They always say that when August rolls around, you know, it's like downhill to December. So that, in a way, has got me a little bit excited. Got things to do, places to go, people to see. Among the things to go to and people to see today, I've got the TV show to record, which is very exciting. We've got a special TV show this week on ENCA. Don't miss it on Wednesday, same as every other week, 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
Some great guests and some interesting people popping in. And I'm really excited about that, too, because, you know, we're into, 7 episodes now?
8.
Is it 8 already? Oh, yeah, this will be the 8th. We've recorded 7.
Okay, that's flown by.
Jesus. I mean,
very quickly.
Sia, do you remember the date we started this?
It was probably like...
sometime in June.
Yeah, I have the document somewhere here.
I had to also just say that this TV show, and I don't go on about it too much during this show because I don't expect that you must watch the TV show and listen to the... maybe you just like the one, you know? But, and it's part of my life, obviously, so I'm going to talk about it, but I don't need to bore you with the details. I just have to say that this TV show came together so quickly that it's almost a bit of a blur to me even now. I can't believe that we are doing this because we had one meeting, and I kid you not, like a week and a half later, we were on air.
We started on the 16th of June.
Jeez. Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the first recording, right. So then we aired on the 17th.
Well, I'm sure you've probably seen on Netflix and the like a lot of series that are popping up that are obviously recorded during COVID because they involve, video conferencing and that sort of thing. But I think it's amazing because instead of putting together these enormous, expensive, time-consuming series and programs, like if you think of Idols, for instance, and what goes into that, people are able to put together good content in a short amount of time without wasting money.
Yeah. And the whole TV industry has changed, by the way. I mean, the way people make shows, it's all different.
Oh,
yeah. Bless you.
Ah, early morning shit. Anyway, so what I was saying is that the TV show, we've got our ratings in for the first couple of episodes, and it's looking really good.
Nice.
Which is terrific because, you know, I only care about ratings. So if we're doing the show for our own.
And that's why you shouldn't be viewing them.
I know, but they sent them to me and now you can't stop it, Sia.
I think I need to ask them not to send it to
you. Yeah. You shouldn't stop the flow of this river. I'm enjoying this.
No, Gareth, we'll give you just a one-line summary.
Well, imagine being a kid at school and you're busy writing your tests and exams, you never get your results.
Oh, yeah, it would feel futile.
Well, the only time management ever gave me results for my radio show was when they wanted to either fire me or pay me less. I was used to getting results for bad reasons, you know?
Yes.
Do you remember that? Yeah. They'd call you in and say, oh, well, you know, the ratings have dipped a little this month. I'd be like, but we've been on an upward trend since I started. Yeah, but you see, the problem is once that trend starts to go down, it usually carries on now. You're like, well, okay, well, I know what's going on here. It's time to redo the contract, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, but that's not why we brought out the – you lying sacks of shit. They would find some – they'd find like the arbitrary month in – 6 months ago where you didn't go up as much as the others. Maybe you see this is a indication of the trend down. Then like a year later, I'd see the results and I'd be like, these lying sons of bitches, they've been telling me it's going down, but all it's done is go up. And they found the 1 month where it was like static, probably because radio ratings, they measure like people with clipboards. So the one clipboard guy probably stayed home sick that month.
It's been 6 years. Thankfully, you haven't had to deal with that.
I know, but it still bothers me. And I don't have the logins to check how many people are listening to this show every morning, but I know we've doubled since lockdown and probably even more since then.
That's so amazing.
That makes me happy. But you know, like Sia says, they keep these things away from me, otherwise I obsess. I'm obsessed. There's some competitive, ugly part of me that is just desperate to win everything.
It's not necessarily ugly. Well, harness the good.
Yeah, it can be destructive, trust me. It ruins personal relationships and things like that. If I need to win something, everything gets thrown in the pot.
That's why I just let you win at everything. Even though I usually would, I'm just like, let him win.
You're smart. You see, that's the smart thing to do, because you don't need to. Not every battle's worth winning. Some of them you could just lose. Like my sister was shitting on me yesterday or the day before. I can't remember when. She called me and said that she's really upset because she went into a shop, like a garage shop or whatever, and she forgot her mask in the car, and they wouldn't let her in. And I said to her, but just put on the mask, you know. It's,
ooh, look at you being conformist.
Well, only because she was so angry about this. She's like, I'm never going to that shop again. I said to her, you know, this
rules is rules.
Yeah, but this is not a battle worth winning. I said to her, so you're gonna enforce your point of view on what? The poor woman who's working the shop counter in the garage shop, she's not that interested in you winning. What kind of a hollow victory is that going to be? She's just doing what she's told. Plus, of course, a business can be fined, and it won't be her. It'll be the owner of the business who gets fined if you walk in without a mask. So I said, just do it, you know. Just go home. Yeah. It's not that far away. Go home, get the mask, or else ask. I'll go to the shop and get you the milk or whatever it is you want. It's just so.
It's not worth it.
No, some battles are not worth winning. So I've got to learn that still myself, even though I preach it to my sister. All right, so what do we got this morning? Lots of headlines. Do you want to head towards the headlines?
Give us the lines of head.
Okay, the first line of head is about the story that has never gone away, and I'm so pleased it hasn't gone away, even though every time it comes up, it drives me up the wall, is Life Estimeni. The Special Investigating Unit says that those responsible for Life Estimeni are not off the hook. I'm glad to hear that. I want to see some people go to jail, frankly. Unit head Andy Mortibi says, even those individuals who resigned from their positions may still face criminal or civil cases. Good. We've been saying on record the phenomenon of people resigning in the face of investigation is so widespread in the public sector. So what we're going to do is we will still pursue these people criminally and also if there are civil recoveries, said Mortibi. Former Gauteng MEC for Health, Qedani Mahlangu, former health head Barney Selebano, and former mental health head Makgabo Manamela are among those who are implicated. They were found to have broken their oaths of office by facilitating the move of 144 mental health patients from the Life Estimeni facilities to ill-equipped NGOs where they all died. 144 people, don't forget. An inquiry led by former Deputy Chief Justice Dikgang Mosenege concluded in 2018, found that the government had acted in breach of the law, which ultimately resulted in their deaths. So we have a decision in an inquiry led by the then Deputy Chief Justice that this was ultimately an unlawful situation. And I want to see people go to jail. I'm sure you do too.
But I cannot believe how long this has taken.
I know, but this is typical. The wheels of justice, they do turn slowly. But we can only hold thumbs and hope. And then, I don't know how this happens, but there's a picture of a Toyota Taz. It's a small car, right? You've seen a Toyota Taz.
Yeah.
In the back of it, six sheep are squeezed in this.
Oh, yeah.
This is stock theft, right? This is in Cape Town. Police say stock theft is becoming an increasing headache in parts of the Eastern Cape. On Friday, sorry, not Cape Town, Eastern Cape. On Friday, officials managed to recover 60 sheep that were stolen in the Pitoli locality. They responded after a man called police for help after the livestock was stolen at his homestead. So these criminals are not stealing from these big commercial farms either, by the way. They're stealing from, like, small-scale subsistence farmers who probably have their entire asset value in a, you know, flock of sheep. And you think about how awful this is for those people, because it's their livelihood. So they get, like, 60 sheep stolen. That's their whole life goes up in flames.
Yeah, for sure.
And these people who steal the sheep, they just stuff them in the back of a Toyota Taz or whatever they've got.
There should be some sort of mechanism that turns a sheep into a wolf as soon as it's stolen, and it just attacks the kidnappers.
The thief, yeah. Except that would be all kinds of hell for the people who have to share the sheep.
Yeah, I don't think that would work.
Stock theft crimes are giving the SAPS sleepless nights. We have to deploy a lot of resources to combat it. Suspects are also attacked and sometimes killed because of stock theft. Sure.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ugly. And we always tend to pay attention to the big crimes, but these are the little things that are bothering people in the Eastern Cape at the moment. And for good reason, they're being bothered. Norma Gigaba will make her first, you remember who she is?
Well, just a messy marriage.
Such a mess. So she's going to make her first appearance in court for malicious damage to property. Yes, listen to this. Comes after former minister Malusi Gigaba's wife is arrested by the Hawks on Friday on charges of assault and malicious damage to property. She allegedly badly damaged a Mercedes-Benz G-Wagon belonging to Malusi Gigaba's friend, the trade unionist Peterson Siyaya. You see what assholes these government people are behind the scenes. They're real they're real life assholes, not just on the political stage.
So do you know what she did?
Tell us. You've got the gossip there in front of you. I've just got the headlines.
She keyed into the side of the car, cheetah.
But this is not on Malusi's car. This is on his friend's car.
Well, she thought, in my mind, that it was Malusi's car. And this all happened a couple of days ago. Now, the rumor mill is already saying that Malusi had a hand in her being arrested on Friday. Now, it happened like earlier on last week, but specifically charges were laid on Friday, and this just speaks to the pettiness within me. If you wait up until Friday and a little close to 4 p.m., because after 4 p.m., once you're arrested, is when there's no chance that you'll get out on that day.
So she was locked up all weekend?
Yeah, I think she was let out early on Sunday morning. Now, imagine Norma Gigaba in prison. Sorry, I'm not
right,
laughing.
But you know what? This is sick and twisted in a number of ways. Now, she can't help it that she married this douchebag, right? Because he is a douchebag. We know he's sending, like, nude photos to all these women and cheating on her publicly, very publicly. And we also know that the two of them were living this incredibly privileged life while he was a minister. And then suddenly when he wasn't a minister, things started to go very south very quickly. But she's still a citizen of this country, a free person. And to be treated like this just because she married a douchebag by that douchebag so that she can spend extra time in jail is just cruel. It's cruel and unnecessary. I wouldn't want any minister having the power to control the criminal justice system, even from afar, in such a way that he can take out personal ugliness against his wife, even if they're separated, whatever she is to him now. It just seems to me petty and nasty, you know?
Super petty.
So, F you, Malusi Gigaba. The source told the Sunday publication a threat on Gigaba's life had been uncovered in June when Norma allegedly tacked the car.
Oh, goodness me.
It was a jealous rage. They used the opportunity to establish her involvement in the alleged conspiracy, if any. I mean, this just sounds like such nonsense. Norma Gigaba's lawyer.
Sort your marital affairs out.
Yeah, I mean, don't bring all this shit to us. Norma Gigaba's lawyer told News 24 on Sunday evening that he could not comment on media reports. I cannot comment because, one, the matter is before the court, and two, those allegations have not been brought to us. We only saw them in the media. So it just sounds like these two are a disaster. and they should really find a way to clean up their life. And they have children, by the way. And these children must be so proud of their parents. So they're going to grow up with no problems whatsoever, of course. These kids are going to be terrifically well-balanced children.
Oh, dear.
We're not going to be a burden on the state or on other people at all. And then Southern California is on fire.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that place is like Australia. It's just flammable. Nearly 8,000 residents of Riverside County in Southern California were forced to evacuate their homes as a wildfire spread uncontained across more than 4,000 acres. Oh, the fire is dubbed the Apple Fire by local firefighters who routinely give blazes identifying names. It was reported Friday in Cherry Valley, a community of 75 miles east of L.A., had destroyed at least one family home. Photographs on Twitter on Saturday showed thick plumes of smoke filling the sky over the mountainous region. The fire had grown from 700 acres on Friday evening to 4,125 acres by Saturday evening. That's in a day, huh?
Oh, but you think now how COVID has compacted this whole problem, because usually people are housed or they gather in certain areas.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Oh, man.
So that's
bad timing.
Yeah, that's happening in Southern California right now. And then finally this morning from EWN, SpaceX has brought the NASA astronauts home safe in a milestone mission. This is so great. The SpaceX Dragon Endeavour crew splashed into the water of Pensacola, Florida on the yesterday at 2:48 p.m. That's 18 hours 48 GMT, trailed by its four main parachutes. It was the first water landing for a crewed U.S. spaceship since the 1975 Apollo Soyuz mission.
America's. It's basically a big plop in the water.
And everybody's fine, and it's just successful from beginning to end. So congratulations to SpaceX and NASA for pulling off this great epochal... I can't even speak properly this morning.
Epochal?
I was going to say event of an epoch, because it really is. It's like private and public space missions are. We're living in the time where that happens. One day when they write the history of 2020, this will be the only positive story in the whole year, is that NASA and SpaceX managed to get this right. So they splashed off into the water around Pensacola and landed down in the Gulf of Mexico. It was the first water landing for a long time. An honor and privilege, said pilot Doug Hurley, who was joined on the mission by Bob Bernkin. On behalf of NASA and SpaceX, we are very pleased to be welcome back to Earth, and thank you for flying SpaceX. Isn't that cool? Thank you for flying SpaceX.
They're called a pilot even when they go out to space.
What would you call him, Sia? A sailor? A driver?
No, I feel like there should be a fancier title.
Oh,
but
that
okay,
is true.
Let's go with pilot.
Yeah, pilot's a good name. No,
I mean, they are.
Not to look down on people who get a massive metal machine to fly in the air as well.
As I understand it, and you can correct me because we've got very smart listeners here, but as I understand it, pilot is not a rank. It's the person who's in charge of the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Your rank might be captain, or you might be a commander, or you might be a major or whatever, but you could be an admiral, but you're still a pilot if you're in charge of that vehicle.
Mm.
I mean, like a person who rides a boat out on the Vaal River is a pilot.
Yes.
So it's whoever's in charge of that vehicle.
I don't know.
Yeah. So Elon Musk said, "I'm not very religious, but I prayed for this one." So he's very excited. And rightly so.
I don't know. If he's weird in reality, can you imagine what his prayers sound like?
Oh, my God, imagine. And he somehow his name came up in this Amber Heard, Johnny Depp situation. What a mess that is.
Mm-hmm.
So Sia, you've got a story about putting your new TV stand together, which I want you to tell everyone. Listen to this. This is DIY Sia. Listen to this story.
Well, it's more like trying to put this new TV stand together. And it honestly, because I was listening to music at the same time, it lasted the span of two songs that I was listening to. So plus minus, it was 7 minutes long before I completely gave up. And that's when I've just realized, nope, DIY is going to be one of those things that goes down as something that I just can't do.
So it's not DIY, but not anyone can.
Can we start?
No.
Let's start at the end. Did you eventually get it right?
Yes, because I called our caretakers in the complex to do it.
Sure.
It was the sweetest sound of a broom on the ground that I was hearing, and then the leaf blower going, and I thought, they're here today.
Yeah. Did you find that it was in pieces?
No, I thought it was going to be assembled. And I even got extra excited when the delivery men called me from the gate. They're like, hi, sorry, our truck is too big to come into the complex. It's more than, I think, 5 tons. So we've been told to stand outside. I thought, my, this is great. It's all done. And then as I walked down to the gate, lo and behold, they're like giving me this very narrow, long box. And I'm thinking, this is not what I ordered. So I had to like carry that back upstairs to my place, and I just stared at it very pitifully for a long time. I thought, you know what, screw it. I have time. I'm going to do it. As just I unpacked it and I saw all of these screws, and what is it called? Is it an Allen key?
Yeah, an Allen key.
Allen keys, yeah.
Already. But
that's the easiest thing to use. It's easier than a screwdriver and a screw.
It's like a reverse spanner.
Yeah.
And then there's also like these plastic bits. I think that's when a screw goes into this plastic bit and that extra reinforced.
Like a washer.
Yes. No, more like those when you're putting a screw into a wall and it's got a plastic condom.
Yeah, that thing. It's called a...
It's plastic long and thin and...
Spikes.
I couldn't do that.
It's like a cat's penis. Spikes on it.
I know what you're talking about.
No, I don't know.
Someone will give us the name in a plug. Thank you.
Plug.
So like a damsel in distress, I listened to the sound of the leaf blower and I stood out on my balcony. Yes, I was wearing a gown because you just can't script these things. And I said, oh, sir. Excuse me, sir.
See, that's so unmanly. You didn't even try, though. You weren't even going to try. You looked at the instructions and thought, this is too much for me.
Yeah, well, doesn't that technically mean I tried? I opened up the box.
No.
I was going to try and figure it out.
No,
within an hour.
I hope when it's the end of the world and I wake up from, I don't know, an unconscious state, and there's fire and doom all around me, that you're not the only other person that's there.
You would not be on my zombie apocalypse team, I promise you that. All right, a few messages that have come through that I want to get to before we deal with any more of Sia's domestic problems. Using the Hawks and the excuse of conspiracy to plot against Gigaba for keying a car sounds so much like Russia and China right now.
Yes, way too much.
Good. Guys, I don't want to brag, but I will. This is from Michelle in Cape Town. She says, Cape Town has had summer for the last 2 weeks.
Mm.
Proper shorts weather. Oh, I'm jealous.
Mm.
But Michelle in Cape Town, it can always just change at any moment by this afternoon.
My children, listen to this story. Just to go back to COVID for a second, Babazi says, my children got exposed to COVID through my brother who tested positive. One of my children tested positive on the 2nd of July, and it was impossible to isolate with a 12-year-old. So we all just stayed with her and accepted COVID. Now we're 7 people in total in one house, and we finished 1 month together, and nobody's sick.
Jeepers.
Yeah, you see.
Good genes.
And also just different ways of affecting different people. Good news alert. My 41-year-old friend was in a diabetic coma last week. She's now up and walking around, eating by herself, no brain damage, no COVID. She'll be discharged this week.
Wow.
Nice, Venetia. Yeah. That's very good news. All right, and then a lot of other funny things. There's something I've got to read for you quickly. We got time? Let me read this to you. This is something that was published in the Zimbabwean Herald. Such a great story. Okay, so the Zimbabwean government are obviously upset because Julius Malema said something about ZANU-PF, right? I don't know what Julius said. He must have criticized them.
It's not his business, but anyway.
Well, this is what they say. So in the Herald, the Zimbabwean Herald, this is how government deal with Julius. And I love this because it reminds me of like the remedial class at school, where two of the remedial class kids start like swinging at each other. And that's what this feels like. And everybody else in the school just gathers around to watch. So here is the article. I'm going to quote from it now. Government also takes offense at the uncouth but unsurprising attacks on the person of President Mnangagwa by Malema, who appears to be under the illusion that vulgarity is an ideology. We therefore wish to remind Mr. Malema that Zimbabwe is not a province of South Africa or one of his shacks, and he should leave Zimbabwe. Listen, and he should leave Zimbabweans to deal with Zimbabwean issues. Okay? It goes on. While Zimbabwe welcomes any counsel from its neighbors, government is of the view that Malema, as one of the opposition leaders in South Africa, is better occupied tackling challenges in his own country rather than pronouncing himself on matters he is not well versed with in Zimbabwe, he said.
This is my Zimbabwe.
Commenting on the same issue, ZANU-PF Director for Information and Publicity, Tafadzwa Mugwadi, said Malema has no moral ground to talk about Zimbabwe. Mr. Julius Malema, or Marema, whatever is the proper pronunciation, has no moral ground to poke his nose and uncircumcised mouth on matters of Zimbabwe, which he is historically, foundationally, and contemporarily unschooled in. It is not only surprising, but absolute hogwash that while our Zimbabwean indigenous farmers who benefited from the land reform itself are yet to comment, Mr. Malema and his moribund group of provocateurs, desperate of waning domestic traction in South African politics, think that Zimbabwe is a ready available topic. As a candid reminder, Mr. Malema has never dealt with, nor can he claim any experience in, empirical management of decolonization processes, to which land is the nuclei.
Wow.
Until he can give us a single exemplary EFF beneficiary of land reform in his own society, then we can neither have parlance nor parity with him or his outfit. So, some people don't take any of these guys seriously.
Gee, well, of course it's going to be water for ducks back for Malema.
If only
our media and politicians treated the issue with the same vigor.
Tell me that isn't
paper
fun.
Has. I love that.
Yeah. That's the Zimbabwean. Well, obviously it's a government paper, but they're basically smashing Julius Malema to pieces. And it is funny to watch Julius Malema and the Zimbabwean government, both of whom are completely ineffectual parties. As I say, it's like the remedial class at school turning on each other. It's very, very funny. Yeah. So I've got Martin Hood on the line. We've spoken to Martin before. In fact, we've done a series called Guncast, which I think there are parts of it in terms of the law which need updating. But really, Martin did a superb job of getting some of the most interesting people in the South African gun-owning community and people who are opposed to it, who we invited and didn't eventually come, because they don't really have much of a case to make. Now, Martin is a gun owner. He's also a supporter of gun ownership, and he has been at the forefront of fighting with GOSA, that's the gun owners of South Africa, to get an interdict. We don't know as legal gun owners what our position is at the moment, especially if you have an expired white license. And I thought, let's get Martin on because he knows all the details here, and I've been receiving communications from the various bodies which I'm a member of what the rules are. It seems, Martin, nice to see you, by the way. You don't look any different, so lockdown obviously hasn't been too terrible for you. There are a lot of people I've seen during lockdown who've aged horribly, so you can consider yourself.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
So, Martin, listen, this government are hell-bent on trying to take away legal firearms from people who obviously in South Africa need them because we can't rely on the police. We know this already. So what the hell is this government doing now to try and thwart legal gun ownership?
So, Gareth, as normal, it's a bit of a mixed bag because we had, the Goza case in the Supreme Court of Appeal, which unfortunately was quite critical of Goza and of the case that they tried to make out to clarify what happens when it comes to expired licenses. And we have a very mixed bag, unfortunately, and the situation is very, very confusing, and it's crying out for legislative intervention. And I know when anyone says, you know, don't worry, we're from the government and we're here to help you, it's a problem.
Yeah.
But we do have a situation where it is just so confusing, so opaque. The people that have expired white licenses are completely and utterly confused, do not know what to do, and they face potential prosecution. And that's not a healthy situation. So I'm going to break down this part of the discussion into two parts, because I think it's very important to emphasize at the very beginning that a new amnesty was declared on Friday last week. Now, an amnesty is not a solution. It's not a permanent solution to expired white licenses, but nonetheless, it's a solution to people that have expired licenses to become legal again.
Now, and what they want you to do is hand in your gun, regardless. Gareth,
that's the law. And unfortunately, the law's been on the books for the last 15 or 16 years. And it's always been part of previous amnesties that you have to hand in the firearm. And it's unfortunate. There are solutions, of course. And the most simple solution is to go and buy another one in the meantime before you use the amnesty. So you can, for example, you've got 6 months, the amnesty is valid for 6 months. Go buy another firearm, get the license, then hand in your other firearm in terms of the amnesty as well.
Okay, I'll do that. I'm writing this down as we speak.
That's one potential solution. But the amnesty is a solution. It's not a perfect solution, and we can debate ad nauseum the problems with the amnesty process. But the reality is, It's the only option available now to a person with an expired white license other than handing their firearm in for destruction and walking away from it. So we need to emphasize at the beginning that there is an amnesty. But again, in order for people to benefit from the amnesty, they have to know about the amnesty and they have to be taken through the process.
Now, this amnesty expires in January next year. And after that, we can only assume that police will go around with the register of firearms and they will go from person to person and confiscate their arms and lock them in jail.
So now we need to go back to the Goza court case, because the judges in the Supreme Court of Appeal, it was a full bench of five judges, and they unanimously agreed on the contents of the judgment. And what they said in the judgment was that the Goza interdict preventing confiscation of firearms effectively prevented the police from doing what they are compelled to do by law. And they're compelled to do two things effectively by law in terms of the Firearms Control Act. The first is obviously control firearms, and the second is to take out from circulation illegal firearms.
Right.
So effectively what the Goza court case said is, police, you must go and collect these firearms. You are compelled to go and collect these illegal firearms. So we do know that after the expiration of the amnesty in January, there is no doubt that the police will then say, right, now we need to go and collect these 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 firearms, and they will start knocking on doors, kicking down doors perhaps, and they will then start arresting people. And I want to emphasize that in certain instances, illegal possession of a firearm comes with mandatory prison sentence.
You can go to jail for like 15 years if you...
Exactly. So this is not a topic that people should ignore. It's a topic that they should take very seriously, and it's an opportunity for them to do the right thing within what the law provides for. And again, I'm not a big fan of the amnesty, because I don't think that it's a permanent solution, but it's a solution that's available to people right now.
Okay, so I'm pleased that we had you on for clarity, but can I just talk about some of the bigger issues? When you hand in a firearm to the police, they're meant to destroy it. They're meant to deactivate it and destroy it and do whatever they have to do to dispose of it. But we know that one of the most irresponsible things as a responsible gun owner you can do is give the police your gun, because usually those guns end up in circulation among criminals for whatever inexplicable reason. And I'm not talking about the law here, Martin. It's not something that you need to comment on, but it's something that I think...
No, I'm going to comment on it, because you're absolutely right.
Most of us are very aware of the fact that we cannot trust the police to destroy and dispose of these arms properly. So if you're a legal firearm owner and they don't go through the right processes and your gun turns up in a crime a couple of months later, somehow you're linked to it. That's what nobody wants, first and foremost.
So, Gareth, I think that you've touched on an issue that is really central to firearms in this country, and that is the issue of trust.
Yeah.
There is no public trust in the police. In the firearms environment, most definitely, but when it comes to policing in general.
And let's remember that most of us have firearms because we don't trust the police to come to our aid when we need them the most. I know that if I call the police, they're going to take a long time to get there, if at all, and by then the damage is done. If it comes to personal safety, if it comes to protecting myself, my family, my possessions, I need that gun.
And one of the biggest reasons why people have not bought into the renewal regime is quite simply that they do not trust the police.
Right.
They do not trust the police to control firearms properly, and they do not trust the police that firearms, if handed in, are going to be properly dealt with. And that trust deficit is so large that we're not going to solve it with an amnesty. We're not going to solve it with a new police minister going to IPED and somebody replacing him. It's a fundamental governmental problem that is not going to go away.
And we know that government, on the meta scale, are not interested in private citizens having weapons. They consider that a threat to them.
So, Gareth, I'll tell you what's interesting, because that's absolutely correct. And one of the reasons why there's been fairly strong attempts to amend the Firearms Control Act is quite simply because way back when it started, everyone was in a state of shock and horror thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to lose my firearms. But then when people got the grips of the legislation, they realized that they can actually make the legislation work for them.
Right.
And the end result is, and I saw some statistics recently, the number of licensed firearms held by legal gun owners in this country has increased by 2 million since the implementation of the Firearms Control Act. And that also takes into account well over 1 million firearms that were handed in for destruction in various processes since 2004. So to put simple numbers here on the table, in 1998, we had 4.5 million licensed firearms.
Yeah.
In 2020, we have 6.5 million, with 1 million of that original 4.5 million destroyed. So it's 7.5 million firearms effectively.
Wow.
So we made this legislation work. And I think that's made government
In fact, I mean, their whole intention has been scuppered then, because more people have licensed legal firearms. And this was not what they intended. They thought that this would go the opposite way.
Well, we also need to take into account, absolutely, and we need to take into account that the social circumstances that we have now are of such an unstable nature. And we can talk about farm murders, we can talk about poverty and starving people in various locations. The need for firearms is actually getting bigger and bigger because people, and particularly people in rural communities, are becoming more and more concerned about safety. And we've seen the recent hotspot murders as a simple example, and a very callous attitude adopted by the Minister of Police to rural security.
Yeah.
And that, I can tell you, is pushing people into buying firearms to the extent that many gun shops are reporting a massive increase in firearm sales.
Well, that's great news. The more private citizens there are that are armed, the less chance we have of being tyrannized by our government.
The more balance we'll have in society.
All right, well, Martin, thank you. It's always good to check in with you, and we will keep tabs on this situation, and good Godspeed and good luck to you guys at GOSA for all the work that you do to try and protect legal firearm owners and the rest of us who are trying to comply with this ridiculous state of affairs. Must keep on doing what we've got to do.
There's some interesting court cases coming up. I'll keep you informed.
Thank you, as always. Martin Hood, who is an attorney who has been at the forefront of making sure that legal firearm owners and their rights are protected, and well done to GOSA for keeping that flag flying. God knows we need it. You know, when you look to yourself, that's all you've got. I know that there are lots of people in this country who are very anti-guns. You have every right to be. But as I've said a million times, it's better to have a gun and not need one than to need a gun and not have one. So we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But I just thought in the light of this new amnesty, which was granted last week, it was a good idea to check in with Martin Hood, who is a partner at MJ Hood and Associates. He's also the co-host of Guncast, which you can go and listen to on cliffcentral.com. So many things to talk
about
this morning.
Apart from going like, is it clay pigeon shooting?
Yes.
And going to the gun training shooting place?
Yes. The firing
have you
range.
Ever,
are you talking about
the
a firing
range? I don't know why. I really, the only term that was coming to my head was bowling alley. I'm like, no, it's not a bowling alley. It's not a shooting alley either. You know what I mean.
Yeah, all right. In the back. What's your question?
Apart from those instances, have you ever come close to having to use your gun?
No, and I hope I never am close to having to use my gun. But it's there, and I do go and practice with it. I make sure that I do some target shooting, and I go to the firing range, and, you know, I see what I can do to improve my use of the gun. I'm not afraid of guns. I'm careful with them. I'm extremely respectful of them. I don't think everybody in the world should have one, but I do think one of the reasons that that gun ownership should go up in this country is it should be a way for many women to have at least the threat of violence on their side rather than the other way around. There are lots of men in this country who'd be a little bit more circumspect about the way they treat women if they thought maybe that woman had a firearm.
Is the use of your gun now part of your, like, just reflexes? When you wake up in the middle of the night and you hear something go bump?
I wish I could say that. I've got a friend who is an unbelievable shooter. He goes, he takes part in these competitions, and he is just an absolute machine. Like, he, you know, you walk around these obstacle courses, and these targets jump out at you, and he just shoots them all right in the head every time. That guy's
great.
Yeah, he's just spectacular. But I'm an okay shot. The problem is, it's the, you know, you never know what the circumstances are of what could go right or what could go wrong. But I would rather have those controls in my hand, know that I'm in charge of my own destiny, than be stuck waiting for someone to either forgive me and not shoot me, or to shoot me just because they were malicious. I'd like to have the option of defending myself, and I think that's the case for a lot of people. So just think about it as a final bulwark against being trampled on by the security state, and something someone, you know, has to consider for themselves. I'm not going to tell you to get a gun or not get a gun. You decide. But at least we know, thanks to Martin, what the current situation is for those people with expired licenses. All right, so many things to get to still. A busy morning for you this Monday, and we're here to take care of you and look after you and make sure it's okay. It is CliffCentral.com, the brand new month of August. And today, the 3rd of August.
CliffCentral.com.